Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 346. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is with me here in Las Vegas, and Cole Coffee is coming with some good news. Cole Coffee, should we celebrate? Should we tip our glasses right now? The quest has been fulfilled. The journey has been completed. Well, I guess the journey's not complete yet. You guys have moving to do.
No. The journey is half the way. We have a destination. We'll say that. Yes, we found a place. Thank goodness, man. What a journey. And I don't know if I gave you the update about the other place I applied. There were two places that I applied for, and this was after watching places go, be there and then be gone before I get a chance to even apply for them.
Crazy.
The first place that I applied for, I was supposed to get this is the crazy bullshit scene that's going on in Vegas for people that, kind of heard me bitching about it last time. So I put in an application. They said it'd be 3 to 4 business days. Three or four business days goes away, and that would have been like, say, Friday of last week. Don't hear anything. I'm like, okay, well, obviously they'll let me know on Monday or whatever. Over the weekend, I get an update from my search listing that was just telling me about different realty things or whatever, that the place that I applied for sold.
What?
So not only did I not get notice from the place that I wasn't going to get the place, they didn't even fucking tell me, as they took my $75 application fee, that, oh, yes, by the way, this is impossible contracts or talks, because that shit doesn't work in a day. You don't sell a house in a day.
No.
So the place sold. I got notice that the place sold on like Saturday or so. So the day after I was supposed to get notice. So that's how shady that fucking company was. They took my application fee knowing that it either was on the market or it was partially in the process of getting sold.
And that fee's just gone. You don't get that fee back.
It's just gone. Non-refundable.
Oh, come on.
Banker's check made out in their name. How shady. So I left a shitty Yelp review on them, but that's how shitty the thing is. But
wow.
Whatever. I could keep bitching about it. Let alone I think I talked about how some places out here are also doing competition, not just like, say you find a place and you want to apply and I like the same place, they're going to take your money and they're going to take my money and then they make us compete for it.
Oh, come on.
Various other things. So some places are taking like 8, 9, 10 people's application fees, knowing that they're non-refundable and only one person gets the place.
That's crazy.
That's how crazy, some bull crap. So luckily, I found a place that was first come, first serve. So once you start the process, that's your place unless you drop out of it or whatever. And this place just so happens to be closer to your neck of the woods.
Yes.
But it's also, it's like 6 minutes, I think I did, the Google Maps told me. It's like 6 minutes from the Apex.
Well, listen, that's what I was going to say. I mean, you got the place. You're going to be, 5, 6 minutes from the Apex. That's a beautiful thing, man. That's going to save you some time and be a nice thing. And Let's not forget, you are just down the road from the spiritual birthplace of the MMA Roadshow, Buffalo Wild Wings at Warm Springs and Durango. Oh, we might have to revive a tradition, my man.
Well, at least every once in a while, because we spend lots of money there when we go there.
We do.
Even if we go and drink it, I'm spending like 40 or 50 bucks. I'm like, we could get like a couple cases for that, and that shit sits in the fridge. But we'll definitely have to pay a visit there every once in a while, because as you said, it is a spiritual birthplace. But yeah, lo and behold, man, to make the long segment longer, I do have a place. I'm super, super stoked. I'm super stoked to be in a different area. It'd be learning a new part of Vegas.
Yeah.
not quite out as far as all the zombies and aliens where you live, but I'm getting closer. I'm getting closer to that area.
You're going to find out, sir, that the southwest part of Las Vegas is a fine place to live, and I think you're going to enjoy it. We welcome you to the extended community. I mean, it's not exactly like right down the road from you, but it's pretty damn close. It's a lot closer than it used to be. It's a lot closer than it used to be.
It's a lot closer. I think you're I think you'll be like 15 minutes, maybe 13, 14, 15 minutes away.
Nice.
Something like that.
Well, congrats, man. I know you still got some work to do. You got some moving to do and all that, but I know how stressful, you know, this whole situation was for you. So I'm happy for you that you got that resolved.
Super stoked to have a place. Now I just got to do the grunt work and actually make the move.
I'm shuddering just thinking about it.
Anybody that's going to be in town in Thanksgiving week and wants to load shit and get sweaty, I will use your help.
What a way to spend Thanksgiving. Could you do anything better than that? Oh, man.
Who needs family? Come help me move.
That's amazing. All right, well, listen, USC 268 was this past weekend. Of course, Cole Coffey did not make the trip out to New York, but I was out there covering it with the young Mike Bond. If you want to hear my wrap-up of what we did there, of what was an absolutely incredible show, head on over to patreon.com/the NBA Roadshow for the and a half episode that was done there. So we won't spend a lot of time wrapping up USC 268. Traditionally, we kind of look forward on these normal shows rather than look back. But I did want to say that a little bit before we sat down to record the podcast, I got a chance to catch up with Justin Gaethje. If you remember that night, Justin Gaethje and Michael Chandler both just went straight to the hospital. It was one of those ones where USC President Dana White just said, hey, I don't want to take any chances. Let's just send these guys out and get them checked out. So we didn't get to speak to
him.
You
think that was Dana that made that call, or you think that was actually his staff?
Well, it could, we've seen him sometimes. He makes that call. Sometimes he says, go, get him out. But it might have been the staff, too. I mean, look, I'll be honest with you. I was in the press room, and I made the call. I was telling everybody around us. I was like, hey, just FYI, you know we're not speaking to either one of these guys tonight, man. Like,
like they need to go.
Yeah, as the fight was unfolding, I was like, I just want to make it clear to everyone, we will not be getting these guys. So I think we all knew what was going on. But anyway, that did mean that I hadn't had a chance to speak to Justin Gaethje and catch up with them. So I got a chance to do that. And I figured, you know what? Let's not waste any time. Let's just jump right into it and hear from the highlight himself, Justin Gaethje. So Justin Gaethje, man, we didn't get to see you after the amazing fight on Saturday night, USC 268, obviously one of the greatest fights I think anybody has ever seen. So take me back to that Saturday night, Justin. After that fight, how happy were you with the performance that you put in?
Yeah, I mean, immediately after, you have no idea. You just ask me, hey, was that cool? You know, was it fun? I was so so composed during that fight. I did not hear the crowd one time. I did not have one thought process. So yeah, after it's over, you're just trying to, you know, gather information and see what just happened. But I felt fantastic. I have no idea why I went to the hospital. Ultimately, I'm happy I did, because I'd rather do that than talk to the media all night. Yeah, because again, I wish it's hard not to have the opportunity to analyze it, but those moments are the purest. So I understand, you know, why it's such a good moment to have, but going home and analyzing it and then being able to talk about it is much better.
That's funny. All right, so I was going to ask you, how hard was it to get you to the hospital that night? Because obviously Dana said, let's get these guys out here and go get them checked out. But you looked okay to me. So was it difficult for you to go, or did you think, well, maybe getting checked out wouldn't be the worst thing?
No, I mean, there's no arguing. Once they say you go, you go. I mean, that's like once the cop says you go, you know, you're going to be in handcuffs and you're getting in the back of my car. At that point, you don't fight anymore. You know, you get in the car, go to court, and then try to defend yourself accordingly. So I argued when I got to the hospital. I was like, yo, do you need to hear my debit card number right now? You need to hear my Colorado driver's license number? I got all this stored in my head, and if you need to know it right now, I can tell it to you. Like, you know, I did not suffer the brain damage as like it looked. It looked like chaos, but he didn't touch me after 3 minutes of the first round. He didn't touch me. So, yeah, I felt great.
Talk about that first round. Obviously, you did get tagged early in that first round. I kind of wonder, was it a gut check? I mean, what's going through your head at that moment? Are you as hurt as you appeared to be?
Yeah, no, I mean, so he hit me with two big rights, then threw a flying knee, and then hit me with the right hand. And that one, you know, it stunned me for a second or less than a second. Like, I never had a thought process of, oh, I'm in trouble, oh, shit. Like, it was just, hit me, you know, boom, found my legs, and then back to that constant risk analysis of judging space and judging time, taking the information, making the decisions. And yeah, I was in more danger. It looked like I was in more danger than I was, but after he landed that shot and being in those exchanges are dangerous situations. So the danger was there. He didn't hit me again.
Yeah, all that happening in milliseconds, you have to make those decisions. So here's the other time I wondered what you were thinking was in round two when you dropped him. I thought the fight might be over right there. So does it go through your head at that moment like, yes, yes, the victory is mine, or do you let yourself think like that?
Yeah, he falls and boom, 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 boom. And then he grabbed my leg, and at that moment I just was like, oh, fuck, you know. And that was the only thought process or change of emotion that I had during that sequence. But yeah, no, when you drop him, dude, I was so composed. Like, you know, fighting Tony Ferguson with no people in that arena allowed me to understand the composure aspect of this fight and if, when, or how I'm you know, affected from the outside energy. When I dropped him, I did not hear the crowd. Nothing outside of my actions was going to decide my actions in that moment. And I could have done things better, you know. When he was on his hands and knees, I should have set something up the middle, but I didn't. Yeah, if I would have, I would have finished him there. And then, yeah, it was back to normal, back to staying composed. You know, that risk factor that's constantly happening is, you know, you have to understand the danger that was constantly presented when you're fighting a guy like Michael Chandler. His ability to create that energy and, you know, take away space in fractions of fucking seconds is dangerous. So yeah, that was constant. And no matter how bad I hurt him, you know, once he made the choice to not go away, he was extremely dangerous.
Yeah, no doubt. I guess I say, you know, you talk about the composure and that sort of thing. Talk about the eye poke. I mean, how hard was that to maintain your composure? Because it looked like for a second, I don't want to say you were going to lose your temper a little bit, but yeah, I mean, it was clear that you were upset by the way things were handled. So was that difficult to hold on, get back to where we are and what really matters right now?
Yeah, no, I lost my temper. You know, the round, you know, didn't get my time. The round ended. I go up to him and try to get him to get his head in the game. I'm like, bro, this is real life. I need you to be on point. Like, I need you to be on point because this is so dangerous. What just happened is so dangerous. And then I sat down and I did not think about it one more time. So, yeah, I mean, again, the composure that I – and then Trevor pulled me back. But, yeah, not once, you know, he told me to – he's like, go back to your cage. I was like, okay, do your fucking job then, and I will go back to my fucking seat. And then I sat down, and then it was gone immediately.
That's good to hear. So they can't stop it now. So, I mean, was your vision impacted? I mean, did it impact anything that happened in the third round?
No. Nope. Thank God. Yeah. Luckily, it didn't hit my eyeball. It went into my eyelid. So all I felt was like an intense pressure. I'm sure if you've ever been poked in the eye, but not in the eye, but in the eyeball, you'll feel you can push on it right now. Feel the pressure. You know, that was big. And, you know, but in that moment, you don't know if your eye exploded. You don't know what happened. You just need a couple seconds to just figure out what happened. So yeah, that I wasn't sure, but thank God it didn't hit my eyeball. So, you know, it didn't scratch my eyeball. It didn't fuck with my lens of my eye. So there was no problem with my vision.
That's awesome, man. Well, obviously you looked fantastic in the third. You walked away with a great victory. You get to the hospital. I'm wondering, there was that amazing picture of you two guys. I always love seeing when two warriors are celebrating together afterwards. Did you guys have any conversation in the hospital? Are you too tired at that point to really go at it? What was that time like?
Yeah, I mean, we had a brief conversation. Yeah, he's so fucking tough, man. And he was, you know, walking around, standing up, acting like he died. I was like, dude, sit the fuck down. Stop. Like, let's check all pride right now, and let's just take care of our bodies. But ultimately, you know, the damage that he took was exponential. And you could put on a tough face, but yeah, when he got, you know, I'm so thankful that wasn't five rounds, because again, I had him figured out after the first 3 minutes of that fight, and it was just going to, the damage incurred would have been exasperated, you know, yeah. way more.
You, you know, he's in an interesting position now, Justin, because he's 1-2 in the UFC. You were 1-2 in the UFC at one point. So I'm curious if he came to you and was like, hey, man, do you have any advice for me? What would you tell me? Because, you know, I got to think that despite the fact that he's had incredible fights now, he's probably second guessing himself a little bit. Did you find yourself in that position when you were 1-2, but you had had these amazing fights in the UFC?
Yeah, I mean, when you go through stuff like this, you can't look for a source of information. The only source of information is yourself. And if you're looking for outside information, like, you're done. You know, there's no coming back. So no, he didn't ask me that because he's a warrior and he's not done. You got to go home. You have to look at yourself in the mirror and you have to believe in the process. You have to understand this is part of the process. Yeah. So, you know, I've been worse and I've never felt better. He's been better, probably never felt worse. So it just sucks. It's a crazy game.
Yeah, it's intense. So how soon did you watch the fight, Justin? Did you go back and watch it immediately that night or did you travel home first? How soon until you watched it back and started analyzing?
I think I started the same night. Again, you know, you're not sure, you know. I have no idea what happened. I really look forward to watching it. I like watching it frame by frame, and I just, man, I'm fucking good. You know, I really, 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 really am good at what this sport and game is. You know, the timing, the attitude, the composure, all of that are perfect. They were perfect that night. You know, they might not be perfect next fight. I will work very hard to be prepared to allow myself to be in that state of mind and that, you know, in that place. But every night, every day is so different. So yeah, I mean, I really was able to bring it all together and be so fucking perfect that night. Even watching it, dude, I don't truly believe the human eye can see what is actually happening in the moment in there. What I'm actually doing, what I'm creating, is really some fucking crazy shit when it comes to using momentum and physics and space and time and all those things together combined with the composure and confidence and the skill that is in me that Trevor has instilled, you know, subconsciously into me, is fucking incredible. So yeah, I'm excited to do it again. Life is so fast and then I come home and it's just so fucking slow right now. Like, but, and I'm excited to do it again, but I can wait 6-7 months. But those nights and those feelings and those chemicals that do get to get released, that shit is so fucking awesome. It's so fun. I love every time I get to do it.
That's awesome, man. I'm glad you can own it because you're right, man. You're just as fun as there is to watch. I mean, there's nobody better right now in terms of entertainment. So now let's talk about titles, right? I mean, you said it going in. Title fighter, we riot. And I think I can't imagine there's any question anymore. No disrespect to Islam Makhachev. He's a great fighter. But you were right there. You turn in a fight like that. I don't think there's any question. Have you had any conversations yet?
If you say no disrespect to him, you would have to understand how disrespectful you'd be being if you thought in any way that he deserved that. You know, he fought number 14, went to number 5, and he fought a late replacement Dan Hooker. There's no world in which, in the integrity of this sport, he would deserve, you know, or justify him doing that, you know.
Yeah, that's just I completely agree. So had the conversation started yet? I mean, I know it's only been a couple of days, but have you had any talks with the UFC or anybody yet about, hey, let's just go ahead and, you know, guarantee this thing, make sure we're all on the same page?
No, I don't need to hear anything. I already know. I'm not gonna, those are things I can't control. You know, I did what I had to do to control the situation. Outside that, I have no more control now. You know, it would be all on the fans, the journalists, the integrity, you know, that has to be questioned. You know, people respect us because it's not boxing, because the best fights happen. I have to fight the winner of Charles Oliveira and Dustin Poirier to justify the integrity of this sport. And that is, I'm comfortable with that. I don't need to do anything else.
Well, I completely agree with you there. So, Justin, do you plan on coming out to Vegas for UFC 269? Will you want to sit cage side for that fight and just just be in Vegas for it?
I don't know. I'm quarter mile at a time type of guy. I'll be in Vegas next week. I'm cornering one of my teammates, Rafa Garcia. Then I'm going to go to the Raiders game. Then I'm going to fly to Arizona, spend Thanksgiving with my family, and then I'm going to go do the Polar Express with my seven nieces and two nephews. And then I have no plans after that right now.
That's awesome, man. So let me ask you, I mean, knowing that you're next in line, do you have a preference of who you face? I mean, does one storyline or one matchup mean more to you than the other? I mean, ultimately, the belt's the goal, right? But does one matchup seem more preferable to you?
Oliveira's easier. For sure. He's an easier matchup. Both incredibly dangerous. Both at the top of this game, you know, highest level fighters. It still comes down to who makes a mistake first, but I take back nothing what I said. And when I get to fight Charles Oliveira, I'll show you that there is no fucking dog in that man. And that will be the game plan.
Do you think he gets by Dustin Poirier, though? Or because he's easier, do you think it's going to end up being Dustin Poirier again?
No, he's easier for me. He ain't no easy fight for nobody. When it comes to Poirier versus Oliveira, he's the easier fight for me because I'm a fucking dog. And this dude is not. And that's the best story that I can write would be to fucking show that. But I really want my revenge on Poirier too. So I promise you I'll wake up, you know, on fire every day, ready to work until then.
I love it, man. Well, I know you didn't want to talk to the media on Saturday night, so we won't make you talk to the media too long today. But I did just want to ask you, I mean, Justin, every fight you have is a damn highlight. It's amazing. It's incredible. But will this one live as something special for you? Does this one have a special place in your career?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think, again, I don't know. It sounds conceited, but I don't think people understand what I'm doing in here. And I don't think that – I think it's something that will just age like fucking fine wine. You know, no matter – if I die early, it ages faster. But, you know, yeah, this is – what I'm doing is spectacular, so I need to keep it up.
I'm glad you're willing to own it, man. Like you said, maybe you worry about sounding conceited, but it's true. I mean, it's the truth. Why not just own it and be proud of it, right?
Yeah. I mean, you just got to be careful. The deeper you dig this hole, and you lose, and the harder it is to climb out. And I think that's you got to protect yourself sometimes from that. So I think that's definitely been why I haven't accepted it. But you know, when I watched that fight on Saturday night, I would be a fucking idiot not to understand again how good I am. So thank you, appreciate that.
Awesome, Justin. Well, I appreciate the time, man. And I'm with you. It's title shot, or I think everybody riots, man. That's the fight next. So I guess sure. We just wait till December to see who the opponent is.
Yeah, what a fucking time that's going to be, huh?
All right, Justin Gaethje. I mean, come on. It's can't argue with the man. Maybe you can. I'll ask you. I just think it's obvious. I think he deserves the title shot. No disrespect whatsoever to Islam Makhachev, but how do you go away from Justin Gaethje right now?
You really, really can. I mean, as much as I get it, I mean, like the guys that are in his corner, that they want to keep riding the hype train. They want to keep pushing their guy, and I get it. I get it. You know, I see what Khabib's trying out there to do, and I know, you know, his manager's trying to do his thing. I get it, but, you know, you still can't. You can't jump to the very, very front of the line just because you're riding the hype train. And I mean, the way things are, you know, somebody the other day, I heard them mention, and they're like, man, I can see why this kid maybe wants to go. He wants to fight and get out of his contract, you know, and so he can get a contract for more money. And I immediately started thinking, I said, I guarantee this kid, the way that he's been jumping in there, I doubt he's on the same contract that he first came in there. I bet they've Absolutely. Already done something to spice things up for him. He's the way they've been pushing him and this little sort of hype train. And when he stepped in and fought some of these other cats, I guarantee this cat's already making some decent cheese for just even being there for such a short time. But that being said, I mean, Gaethje's been at the top again, and he just knocked out the guy that just fought for the belt, you know, not too long ago. I mean, it would feel wrong to make Gaethje wait longer there was a stretch when he was waiting so long to get his shot.
Right.
And I'm all for, you know, bringing the guy, the hot prospect up or whatever. But, I mean, the kid's got nothing but time. You know, he really, well, I mean, he really does. Gage is not going to be in the game for much longer. You know, I'd rather let him get his due while he's still at the top and while he's still deserving before you skip him and start putting a kid that, you know, has nothing but time on his hands to get there.
Yeah, I completely agree. And listen, I got no issue if you want to put Islam in like a number one contender fight or something like that. I got no issues with that at all. I think that'd be perfectly fine. But just right now, I think the title shot is Justin Gaethje. I did want to say, by the way, the subtle – well, or not so subtle call out of Charles Oliveira there as well, saying, you know, there's no dog in him. Now I don't know which one I want to see more, man. I don't know if I want to see the rematch with Dustin Poirier, if I want to see the little bad blood here with Charles Oliveira. So we'll see how that all plays out. I did want to touch on one other thing, and hopefully, you know, Scott McCrade obviously has been a big supporter of the show lately, and he had reached out to me and asked about the eye poke that we talked about in there as well. And, you know, Scott had mentioned that just how upset he was with Mike Beltran and the way he handled that. And, you know, I think it's good to hear that there wasn't any real damage, but, you know, Mike, I'll just be honest, man. I think Mike fumbled that one a little bit. He just made a mistake. I mean, some people, I don't know if it was the heat of the moment thing. It was just so crazy. But, I mean, Mike clearly made a mistake there. You know, not, first of all, just allowing Justin to get struck. That was a problem. Yeah. And then the weird communication of, you know, are you okay? I'm okay. And just right back to action and not even looking at the eye. That was a problem. So I don't want to, you know, I don't want to jump on him too much. You know, luckily I don't think it impacted the fight, and it's good to hear Justin say, hey, my vision was fine. Yeah. It was just a little pressure on my eye, but Mike dropped the ball on that one a little bit. He's a good official. He's a good official.
Yeah. And it's funny, you know, cause when I watch at the time, and I remember everybody jumping on his case, you know, the way that I took it, when I was watching that interaction, Justin just seemed over. It seemed like he wanted to get back into the action. And when Mike asked him, like, are you ready to go? He was more like, yeah, you know, like, let's just go. I don't want to wait. Like, and I just took it that Mike took completely off Justin's cues, that he didn't want to waste any time to keep moving forward because he had done some damage. So when everybody was jumping on him for, man, why did he rush? In my mind, I was like, he just asked the fighter, and the fighter clearly gave him the impression that he didn't want to wait any. It wasn't like he was like, all right, well, let's go. And Justin was like, wait, no, I don't want to go. Justin was like,
true,
let's go. You know, like, I want to go right now, you know. So I wasn't personally as thrown off by it, because it felt like to me when I watched it at the time, that the conversation between the two, that he took completely everything, his decision to go right back was the cue that I felt, that I even heard when I was listening to what Justin was doing to him. And then when I heard everybody going like, man, he should have stopped it longer, I was like, man, maybe I watched that wrong. Maybe I heard it wrong. Because when I was watching, I was like, okay, I get it. He was ready to go. So he let him go. You know, just same thing with guys take a nut shot. Are you going to force a guy that takes a nut shot when he's like, I'm ready to go. I don't want to stop. I got my opponent hurt, even though they'll never say that, the last part. But, you know, when they're itching to get back in there, it's not like going to be like, no, wait. You know, granted, I'm not trying to say an eye poke is the same as a nut shot. But if a fighter says, I'm ready to go on a nut shot, we don't think anything differently about it. We say, okay, the fighter made the decision and he said he wanted to go, so I went. But now that we're like, okay, when the fighter said he was ready to go, but we're like, no, but it was an eye poke. He really should have took longer, even though the fighter said he wanted to go, because the fighter had just smashed on Chandler. He had just been smashing Chandler, I believe, at that point. So in my mind, he was like, dude, I have momentum. Let me go finish this. If my eyes clear that I can see right now, I'm going to go smash this dude.
I can see that. It was a little bit of a miscommunication is what it boils down to. I think it started with Beltran not really, you know, not really properly stopping the action, obviously, which allowed Chandler to land kind of what I would say is a free shot there. And then because of the way he slowed it down but didn't really stop it. You're right, because Justin did say, I'm all right, let's go, you know? So I think it was, a little bit – I think they both have to take a little bit of responsibility, I guess, for being honest. I just think it wasn't necessarily handled right from the beginning. But you bring up some good points there.
Justin, because Gage never – he never complained after the fact, did he? Maybe he said something I didn't hear. I don't remember him, like, even after the fight saying, like, you know, that was wrong. Like, I don't remember him complaining in the ring or anything, or just saying in his corner, like, oh, he should have whatever. But yeah, I was surprised. I mean, I guess I was surprised about how bad others were jumping on him, because, like you said, Beltran's a legit ref. He's one of the better ones, you know. I mean, he's not the best, but he's pretty darn good.
He's pretty darn good. He just made a little bit of mistake there, no question. All right, listen, one other thing I did want to share about USC 268 before we move forward. I was reaching out to Ali Abdelaziz, actually, to find out about Vicente Luque. If you remember, he stepped in on short notice and missed weight. I don't even know that we knew he stepped in on short notice. He stepped in as a replacement opponent, as a backup. What I did find out is he only took that opportunity on 10 days' notice, man. So it's not like he had a lot of time to get ready for it. And there was also a little bit of a miscommunication in the fact that he thought he was going to get an extra hour, because the rule there is that you get an extra hour. But apparently the commission said, look, both those guys already made weight. You don't need to make weight anyway, so you don't get the extra hour. Now, I will say, if that's the case, if what Ali Abdelaziz is telling me is true, that could have been a big problem for the commission, because what if somebody had popped for COVID, you know, on Friday night, or some weird thing had happened to come up, and now you got this guy that could have made weight but didn't? So I think the commission kind of screwed up there a little bit if that's exactly what happened. But he told me Vicente thought he was going to get an extra hour. The commission told him no. So I guess I just say that because I know even me, I was thinking, ooh, that doesn't look good for his opportunities to get into a title fight soon if he can't even make weight. But let's just remember that he took that on 10 days' notice, and he actually thought he was going to get an extra hour that he didn't get. So I kind of say give him a free pass.
Yeah, basically. I mean, he took it short notice, but I'm getting not that I'm gonna sound like a dickhead. We're getting way too often recently where now these fighters are already accounting for that they're gonna get this extra hour after they fail. How about starting early and stop thinking like into your planning that, okay, I just need to get to this point. I need to get up there, get on scale, be within a range that they're gonna give me an extra hour, and then I can go. Like, stop fucking trying to game the system, you know, and then the system doesn't work because they say no, you know. Like I said, I'm going to sound like a dick. I don't mean it like that.
Yeah,
it keeps happening. We had that happen with the Contender Series recently, and we had it happen at the UFC recently as well, where these guys now are trying to game the system. If all you need is an hour, how about starting 1 hour earlier? And, you know, a day before or now or 2 days before or something, and stop trying to expect. But you're right. The commission could have really they dodged a bullet there, because just because the two guys you don't even think about that, because they get tested again right after the weigh-ins. Yep. So you're right. They could have popped, and then the commission would have been like with their hands up, like, "Oops, we messed up. Sorry, you don't have a backup. I guess that fight's got to get canceled now." So bad on them for doing that. But man, I really wish fighters would stop trying to go into weigh-ins already trying to just think that, okay, I just got to get up there, miss weight, and I'm going to get an extra hour. You know, they're just trying to game the system, and stuff like this is going to happen. You know, I mean, and what happens when you're an extra pound heavy and you don't get that hour, and then you don't get to, you know, you don't get allowed to weigh in. The commission's like, no, we're not going to give you a chance. You're too heavy. There's no way you're going to make whatever. So, I mean, I don't know. Just stop trying to game the system. But 10 days is really, really short notice, man. I mean, again, I get it. You want to agree to take the fight and whatever. But if you're taking it on such a short notice, you have to be 100% sure that you're going to be able to meet your end of the deal. Yeah. They're agreeing to let you hop in there, but they're doing it with the understanding that you say you're going to make weight. And if you can't do that in 10 days, don't blame the short notice on the fact that it's a short notice. You agree to do it.
True.
If you're not going to be able to do it, don't do it. Somebody else could have stepped up. I get it. You want to take your chance and be that guy that can get in there and do it because those shots don't come, but you can't really make too many excuses if something fails afterwards.
By the way, I'm going to go ahead and pull back the curtain just a little bit. Cold Coffee's motivation for people not taking an extra hour is that he knows after the weigh-ins are over, he has to go edit the Twitter mailbag from Nolan. And so he's like, now I just got to sit here and wait an extra hour, and I can't get there to edit the Twitter mailbag.
You know,
and
that, my favorite.
That is why he's coming down on you.
No, not, but now you made me think about it. I'm going to go even harder now that I'm thinking about it. But there is that fact as well.
too good. All right, listen, we are covering USC Fight Night 197 this week. One of those early start times for us here in Las Vegas. It's a 10 a.m. start time for the prelims and a 1 p.m. start time for the main card. So it's an earlier day, which you will not hear me complain about one bit. The main event is Max Holloway versus Yair Rodriguez. And, you know, this is a funny one. First of all, I will say, I don't feel there's quite as much buzz around this fight as I thought there would be this week.
Yeah.
But I'm also going to say this, and I'm gonna get what you think. I kind of understand it, too. Even though I'm surprised. Here's the thing. It's just I think this fight's going to be fun. I think stylistically it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be entertaining as long as it lasts. I have a feeling, especially kind of looking at the betting odds, and I'm guessing once I look at our staff picks and they come out, I just think that everybody feels that Max Holloway is executing on such a high level right now that Yair Rodriguez coming in off this extended layoff is just going to have a really hard time with him.
I think he's going to have a hard time, but I don't envision that equates to, hey, he's going to walk in and be smoked in a round or two.
Right.
His toughness. I mean, Yair, I mean, like, that's the thing. I mean, this guy he's amazingly talented. We just haven't seen him in, it hasn't been the longest of times, but right. I mean, it's
2 years. It's 2 years.
Yeah. I mean, well, there's the, what was it? What's the 116-2021? Oh, wait, no, I'm looking at, I'm sorry, I switched over to Holloway's picture. So, yeah, I mean, but still 2 years, but it's still like Yair's, I mean, it's not like a guy hasn't been training. It's not like he's like done like me and just sits on the couch every night and watches Sling or like Netflix or Hulu and getting fat eating noodles every night. This is a cat that's going to come in at a high level and be able to do some things. And I just don't. And the thing with Max, I mean, Max grinds guys down. It's not like he just goes in and smashes dudes and we're out, you know, we just got the fight's over in one round. I mean, like, it might be a completely dominating five rounds, but I don't envision Yair's going to be that out of step that this is just going to be a walk in the park for Max by any stretch. Because I think Yair's just tough, man. He's got that, that Mexican strength, you know, that Mexican heart where, you know, I think he'll sit there and if Max doesn't get the perfect shot to take him out, he's going to be in there for all five rounds. I don't think he's going to tire out. I think he's been doing what he needs to do, and I think he's got the right mentality that he's coming back, and he needs to prove. I mean, he's got a lot to prove. I think a lot of people have been saying for so long, like, this guy shouldn't be in the rankings. He's not active. Why is he up here? And I bet he's been, when he has been getting in the gym and grinding, I guarantee that's the stuff that's in the back of his head every time, so that when he goes in there, he doesn't want to look like a guy that doesn't deserve to be at the top of the rankings, you know? And the thing about Max likes to have some fun and likes to play. If he's going out there looking dominant and knows that he can dance around and do his thing and look dominant, he's going to enjoy just taking that round and banking it. You know, he's not going to get upset and be like, oh, we're going into the third round. I need to get to finish this round, you know, because it's going to make my highlight reel look better. His whole highlight reel is the whole fight, you know. He just wants to look through the whole thing. So, I mean, this fight could go I'm envisioning that it's going to be a Max victory, but it's going to be a decision in the fifth round. I don't see a finish happening in this.
And if that happens, man, I think people are going to get their money's worth, because when you look, well, the money's worth, it's on free TV, yeah, right? It's ESPN Plus, but I'm saying it'll be entertaining, right? Because when you look at the way their styles match up, if it does go a full five rounds, it's going to be very entertaining. So I am looking forward to it. I do favor Max Holloway in the matchup, but that's no, again, as you kind of mentioned, that's not a slight to Yair Rodriguez. I mean, Yair's the real deal. It's just, I feel like Max is just, you know, he's I mean, some people believe he should be champion. I don't, you know. I mean, I believe Alexander Volkanovski won those fights.
I agree.
But they sure were competitive, man. And I don't really argue with the people that think Max thought he won, because, you know, it was very close. Now, I am interested to see where Max goes after this, right? Because we talked to him ahead of time, and it's like, well, you know, are you looking at this as a number one contender fight? Do you go back? I mean, and credit to Alexander Volkanovski, who has said, look, if I got to fight him a third time, I'll fight him a third time. At least he's going out there and fighting contenders, so I'll do it. But it sounded like the UFC is kind of maybe already taking some preemptive measures to say, hey, we don't want to do this fight again, because Max came out and said, hey, man, I can't really tell you what's going on, but listen, we got some big things on the horizon. You know, he's like, don't forget, I got a win over the reigning lightweight champ right now. Don't forget, I'm the best boxer in MMA, and weird fights are happening right now, you know, alluding to some boxing or some crossover or things like that. And he said, you know, and don't forget, I'm always on a short list to face Conor McGregor as well. So it sounds to me like he's, I don't want to say that he's not even worried about it, but it sounds to me like he's like, hey, man, title shot's not a big deal to me. It's not, you know, I got a lot of big opportunities on the horizon. So I don't know. I found that pretty intriguing.
I got the same vibe from him. Every bit when he was up there was like, if it happens, it just felt like if it happens, it happens, you know. What's his one of his phrases? I forget what he
is. It is what
it is. What it is. You know what I mean? Like, and the way that he didn't want to drop the, he didn't want to, you know, drop the, you know, the big bomb of whatever he has in the works. It seems like whatever he has in the works has him excited, has him looking forward to future possibilities. And it didn't feel like it had anything to do at all with the belt. For him, it just felt like he's enjoying his time. Whatever is a good fight and whatever keeps him happy and, you know, whatever helps him be the daddest man on the planet, you know? I mean, he just seems to be enjoying life right now, enjoying what is going on. And, you know, you got to think for this cat, I mean, he was such a dominant champion. He's done so much. I think he's enjoying not having that pressure. And we've seen that happen time and time again from these champs that carry the belt and then they carry all the pressure and they have to always be on, they have to carry all this and they're always doing this. And then when they get the belt taken away, you get that sense when they come to peace with the fact that they lost the belt, then they're smiling, then they're feeling themselves again. And then the prospects of what starts happening, then they get find excitement in different areas. And I just feel like he's excited for what is going on in his life right now, you know, and, who knows what it is, if it is boxing or whatever. I'm not even sure how many fights Max has left on his contract right now. Maybe, I mean, there's the possibility that, you know, if it does come to boxing, you know, maybe he's worked things out and he's like, hey guys, you know, I want to re-up my contract, but say he's on the end of his deal. And they're like, well, we can, you know, maybe we can work something out and let you have a little fun doing your thing. And then, you know, have a little fun with us. I mean, who knows? But it definitely didn't feel like Max, if he gets the win, is going to be immediately calling out anything because he already feels like he's already got his next two steps laid out, you know. So I'm just enjoying the fight week. I'm enjoying the fact that you're right. It does feel like it's not – I mean, granted, we've had some crazy big cards, but that last card was so crazy and ridiculous that I just feel like people are still reeling over that fight. Like the Gaethje-Chandler fight was just bonkers, man. After seeing that, I was good not seeing fights for a couple weeks or so. I'm ready to just be like, I'm good. Like, I just saw the best thing I've seen in a while. Like, I don't need to see anything, but we're like, oh, nope, we're right back at it, you know?
It's so true. And I think no matter what, like, when you come off the road, and I know you were just watching it at home, but, you know, when you come off the road from a big pay-per-view event and there's a ton of media and there's whatever, and then we're back in the Apex and there's, like, four of us, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I guess it just feels like maybe there's not quite as much – much buzz.
It's
but,
true.
Even this weird day off,
like today was like a weird day off in fight week. It's like, wait, we're still in fight week? And like, oh, yeah, no, yeah, we got to get there bright and early tomorrow, you know.
Bright and early for the wins. Well, look, the rest of this card, I do think it's going to be an entertaining one. Marcos Rogera de Lima versus Ben Rothwell. You know, heavyweights can sometimes be a little sloppy, but those two guys know how to finish fights. Ben Rothwell was seemingly in good spirits. I can never get a read on Ben Rothwell. Yeah, I can't tell if he's mad or not.
He's interesting. He's a character.
He's definitely a character. So, you know, we'll see what he brings to the table. The return of Leah Letson after 3 years away, that's intriguing against Felicia Spencer, who, I'll be honest with you, I don't know if I just forgot, but I don't know if I ever even knew that she lost her brother, and you know, that maybe had an impact on some of her recent fights that I thought were rather flat performances. That was, you know, it'll be interesting to see if she rebounds, because I know there was a lot of hype around her at one point, and some of that kind of faded away. The fight that looks like it got promoted to the main card, although they shuffle these things all the time now, is Miguel Baeza versus Chaos Williams. And my God, that's going to be a great fight. Love to see that one on the main card. Somebody's going to sleep. Julio Arce versus Song Yadong will kick things off. That looks like it could be all action. Insert Yadong joke here. I mean, you kind of had. I feel bad because it's the man's name, but it's just funny. I'm immature and it's funny. Yadong is funny. And listen, the action goes down to the prelims. Joel Alvarez versus Thiago Moises. That's an underrated fight that could be really good. Cynthia Calvillo versus Andrea Lee. Like, that's the one that I think that jumps off the page. You look at Sean Woodson coming back. Courtney Casey's always in good fights against Liliana Chachua. Rafael Alves versus Mark Diakazi. That could be crazy. That's early on in the night. And we're starting off with Kennedy and Jakuwu versus Daun Jung. I mean, we could have a whole lot of action from start to finish here.
Yeah, it should be pretty sweet. Yeah, I'm excited to see how Kennedy looks. Every time he comes out, he gets a little bit better. He opens up more so. And man, he's got a huge frame, but he's still sort of like filling into it. So, I mean, this guy, I am so looking forward to what his future is like in like 2 or 3 years or something as he gets even just bigger and bigger. Because, you know, you hear about, you know, Ryan Spann, these heavier guys, you know, train with him and he's given them the business. And it's just like, but then you'll see him come in the press room afterwards and he's super quiet and he's just sort of, you know, just quiet and shy almost. And then you just see him go out there. And when he starts firing, man, he's fantastic. And he seems to open up better and better. So to have that fight right off the get go, I'm really, really excited for this card, man.
Could be nuts, man. I think it's going to be
fucking
entertaining.
Crazy. I agree. This could be a really, really good night.
Knock on wood that we haven't jinxed it. And hope that listen, it's not the only big card this weekend. Bellator 271, of course, is Friday night. You got one of the greatest women of all time, Cyborg, putting her belt on the line in the main event against Sinead Kavanaugh. And, of course, Danny Segura, who lives down in Florida now, he's on the scene covering that. And I thought, what better way to help preview a little bit of Bellator 271 than to bring in Danny himself, and was able to get him on the phone. So here's what here's me and Danny previewing the card. All right, we've got him from down in Miami, Florida, Danny Segura. We're gonna talk a little Bellator 271, but Danny, let me just ask you: life in Florida's worked out pretty good for you, right, man? I mean, you used to be the New York guy, you made your way down to Florida, and damn if it's not like the hottest scene in combat sports these days.
Yeah, I didn't really to the avoiding, you know, hefty New York lockdowns, but turns out I was in for a bunch of fights and a bunch of, you know, events. So, you know, I can't complain. Got a little bit of everything.
Yeah, no doubt, man. You're getting to see a little bit of all the organizations coming down there. I guess it's just is that your dog there in the background?
yeah, he's getting a little cranky, but I don't know what's wrong with him, but yeah.
Hey, you know, we'll always take a little guest host jumping in there. All right, let's get into it, man, because I know you've had a long day out there covering Bellator 271, and you got more to get to tomorrow. But I just kind of want to get your feel overall. I mean, look, I'm not going to lie. It's been a long time since I've covered a Bellator event, man. I've been locked in with UFC being here in Vegas. So just give me the vibe around right now, and, you know, especially as you see – you know, Chris Cyborg, the one of the greatest of all time in the women's division, competing. Where, you know, what do you say when she fights? I mean, it's amazing to see her fight, but nobody ever really picks against her, right? So, just give me the overall feel down there this week.
Yeah, I would actually say this is one of the more interesting fights that you can put Cyborg in outside of probably like the obvious ones. You know, the Amanda Nunes, the Kayla Harrisons. You know, sort of like the bigger bouts. Kavanaugh here has sort of made things interesting because I think she's kind of been not exactly disrespecting, but she's got like that, you know, SBG, Conor McGregor vibe where it's like, you know, all about martial arts, respect, but at the same time, it's a fist fight and, you know, respect goes out the window once we step in the cage. So, you know, she does look, you stand next to her, I was interviewing her, she doesn't seem a whole lot smaller than Cyborg, which that has been an issue in the past, obviously Cyborg being just physically more imposing than all of her opponents. And then she's got this vibe that she's going to throw down and go out on her shield. And, you know, obviously Cyborg is an all-time great. It's got all the experience in the world, super, super technical. I'm not saying we're going to see an upset here, but I do think we might see a different fight than the ones that we're used to. I don't think we're going to see someone on the back foot running away, just trying to see the final bell. I think, you know, win or lose, Kavanaugh's going to go out on her shield.
You know, that's interesting because you're right. I mean, one thing, you know, this is not a blown up bantamweight, right? This is not somebody fighting out of their division. And, Sinead seems to be saying all the right things. I mean, sometimes we see fighters that are mentally beat before they get in there, and you know, you can kind of tell, I think, that they're just telling themselves. Mm-hmm. I always love the line, like, "What? She's not really a cyborg. She's just a woman." Yeah, like, all right, come on, you know, she's a badass. We know you're a little bit worried, but I would agree with you that Kavanaugh, at least from a distance, seems like she believes she has a chance. And I guess, I mean, if you're just going to go in there and go toe-to-toe, maybe it's not the worst thing, right? I mean, we saw it work when Cyborg was maybe a little too aggressive with Amanda Nunes. I mean, maybe that's almost the best way to fight Cyborg, because I don't know that you're going to out-tactic her over a lot of time. Maybe it is best to just fight fire with fire sometimes.
No, it really is. And honestly, like, do you want to be just another title defense, another, you know, win on Cyborg's record? Like, go out there and do something. You know what I'm saying? And I think that's the biggest thing, and she's mentioned it, like, you know, girls go in there already defeated, and you see it. I mean, it's hard, and I don't blame these girls as well. I mean, I'm scared of Cyborg, you know, like, who isn't? You know, Cyborg is a very scary individual, and I'm not even fighting her. I'm just interviewing her. So yeah, but like, she definitely has this thing that, you know, she's going to go in there and make it a fight, and that's all we can expect. Right. I think, you know, it's pretty clear that Cyborg is obviously the favorite, but I think at least Sinead will make things interesting here. And look, something also I want to point out, and then I'm not saying an upset's going to happen. Again, I want to be very clear, John, but Father Time is undefeated. Yeah. And Cyborg so far has shown no signs of slowing down, but she is 36 years old, and you got to wonder, when's that time? I mean, Anderson Silva looked invincible until he didn't. Right.
Yep.
So many other greats. So you just wonder, when is the time? When's going to be that fight that, you know, things are just not clicking for her and things go south? Who knows? Is it this one? I probably think that it's not. But again, I don't think we're too far from it, keeping in mind that she's 36 and she's been fighting in mixed martial arts for like almost two decades or something.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. That's a great point. May not be, you know, this weekend, but it's going to happen at some point. All right, listen, no disrespect to Tyrell Fortune and Linton Vassell. I mean, that's a good fight, but man, the one that I'm just, I got to be honest, I'm most excited about, and you tell me if it's the same, Justin Gonzalez versus Aaron Pico, man, this just looks like a phenomenal fight. Is this the one you're probably, you know, kind of most peaked about going into the weekend?
Yeah, definitely. This is, I think, even obviously, you know, Jair Rodriguez and Max Holloway is a great fight. Probably in my opinion, the best fight of the weekend. But as far as storyline, I think this one tops all of them. I think this one tops any other fight in Bellator and any fight in the UFC, because the storyline here is super, super interesting. I mean, we're talking about a guy in Aaron Pico that had all the makings of becoming a champion, and what a terrible start he had to his career. I mean, at one point he was 4-3. Everybody was questioning, like, is this really for him? Like, does he really have it? He's 4-3. But at the same time, there was that layer that he was just fighting, you know, former title challengers, guys with 30 fights right off the bat. So I'm glad that he took a step back. Clearly he needed it, because once he did, now we see him on a 4-5 win streak. And more importantly, we've seen skill development. He looks a lot different now than he did when he first started, obviously, as one can expect. And here he's finally getting a bit of a step up. So, yeah, we know what you can do against sort of lower tier opposition. And again, all respect to his, you know, previous opponents. But Justin Gonzalez, man, undefeated, 12-0. The guy's got some experience. He clearly doesn't lack any confidence. You can watch the scrum that we had over on MMA Junkie for his pre-fight. And dude, he's got some tools. So this is a little bit of a step up. And we're going to see what Aaron Pico has, because truly, like, he checks all the boxes. You know, he has a lot, again, promises to be, you know, a future champion, but you know, that all sounds good, but at some point you got to put in the results. So this is a big, big test for him. I'm curious to see how he's going to look. Also, his first fight since becoming a father, and he's just 25 years old. So I feel like that man has a lot going on in his life. So we'll see how he shows up.
Wow, that's still crazy to think about how young he is. No, I think this is a great step up in competition. You know, I was a little bit surprised, honestly, looking at the odds. Pico minus 350 in some places that I'm seeing. I mean, I'm not saying that's not accurate, but I don't know, man. That just seems heavy for a guy that has had some missteps along the way a little bit. What do you think? I mean, does that sound like an accurate line to you, or do you kind of like an underdog maybe in that role?
I think he should be the favorite entering the bout, but I do agree with you. I think the odds are a little bit off. I think I would have him like at a minus 200 or something like that. I think he has a sizable advantage, but not one that you can discard Justin Gonzalez whatsoever. I think Justin Gonzalez could have very well, pull off the upset here. And again, it wouldn't be that big of an upset. Again, I expect Pico to win, but I wouldn't be shocked if Justin Gonzalez win, because again, he's got the experience. He's looking very good in his career, undefeated. And as you said, we've seen Pico fall short before when he takes big steps, and this certainly is a bigger step compared to the ones that he's taken prior. Four fights.
That's true. I mean, I picked Pico in our staff picks as well, and I do expect him to win, but that number just kind of popped off the charts to me a little bit. So interesting. One more guy I wanted to ask you about on the main card, Steve Mowry facing Rakim Cleveland. Talk to me, where do you think Mowry is at this point, right? Because, I mean, here's a guy that you see the traffic. It's crazy, just the 6'8" guy, every time we put that in a headline, I don't know, it just did, like, insane numbers at MMA Junkie. But now he's starting to build his record a little bit, 9-0, I believe, at this point, undefeated main card here. I don't know, is this a real guy, or is this just kind of a, I don't say a freak show guy, but just a guy that, looks different than somebody else, so therefore he's somebody you can write about. Or are you high on his upside?
I mean, he definitely looks different than everybody else. I mean, he walks into the room and he definitely stands out, standing at 6'8". I mean, you just see him and, he definitely stands out from the rest of the card. In fact, I was, shooting the face-offs at the ceremonial weigh-ins, and I had to readjust my camera a lot when he came in. And it almost felt like it was a catchweight, open weight bout, because it looked like a heavyweight versus like a middleweight. And it's not that his opponent is small. It's just, Steve Mowry just towers over everybody. But look, I'll say this. Again, I would like to see him against, more. And hopefully if he does get a victor here at Bellator 271, hopefully that's in his future. And I think it is, because I think it's time. But I would like to see him against bigger names, known commodities, guys that we already know what they bring. So if you do beat somebody with a name, we know what exactly that victory means, what type of performance against somebody that's already, tested, that's already proven. But so far, I mean, he's undefeated, right? He's 8-0. He'll be competing in his ninth fight coming up here. He's fighting somebody with over 30 fights of experience, even though, maybe not the best record, 22-13, but still, experience is experience. He does have some solid wins in Bellator, and he comes out of the Sanford MMA, and we know how good Sanford has been at like building these bigger guys, Anthony Johnson, Tyrone Spong, Rashad Evans when he was fighting, so he's backed by a solid camp. Again, he looks the par. I mean, like I said, he checks all the boxes, but in my opinion, if he gets a victory at Bellator 271, it's time to put him against no names. It's time to, throw him in the pool and see if he can swim.
Yeah, that's a great point, because he picks up these wins and we don't really know what they mean yet. So that's a fantastic point. All right, on the prelims, I got to ask you, of course, about Valerie Lareda. She generates headlines, of course, good or bad. It seems like people either love her or they want to hate and say she's a fraud and what's she doing and whatever. So what's been the vibe with Valerie Lareda and this matchup this week?
Yeah, so I'm super glad that you brought this fight up, because this is one of my favorite fights, one of the fights that I have my eye on out of all the fights this weekend, because there's truly, I think, something here. And also, I just want to point out, there's always a difference, obviously, between fans and media. We don't always see eye to eye. Sometimes fans, have certain perspective about a fighter and media is like, totally the opposite, or vice versa. Sometimes we match. But I have to say, the fan base really, really has this one wrong. And I'll even call out and say even some media members, because it almost seems like, oh, Valerie, they're just putting her because she's obviously, very good looking, very attractive. She's got the following. She's getting that shine because of that. But really, there's no substance behind her skills, behind her career. But I got to say, man, whoever thinks like that, whether it's fans or media, they got that totally wrong, because Valerie Lareda is someone that truly does care about fighting. Like, you just listen to her talk and you just get that vibe. Also, like, who the hell would go to American Top Team and train with all those savages if you didn't care about fighting, when you can just be comfortable at a smaller gym? She's leaving her comfort zone. She lost her first amateur fight, stopped training under her family gym, went to American Top Team. Things were going well in her career. Loses her first professional bout, which was obviously her last bout, switches her head coach immediately. Now her head coach is Thiago Alves. Told me that 80% of this camp was just grappling and jiu-jitsu, which is obviously the holes that we saw in her defeat. And what else? You know, I talked to her about the critics, and she said, look, everybody loses at some point. Champions have lost. Yeah. Like, you know, why is everybody bagging on me? And I do think that fans and media have been unfair as far as criticizing her, because she's just 23 and she only has, you know, three fights, you know, before the defeat, right?
Right.
Now with the defeat, she only has four fights in her career. Like, what kind of opposition do you expect her to be fighting? I mean, didn't we learn anything from the Aaron Pico experiment?
Yeah, that's right.
This is the type of fights that she should be in. And look, her last fight wasn't great. She obviously showed holes in her game. She lacked the grappling. But no fighter that's, you know, 3-0 entering a bout is going to have answers to everything. I think it was maybe a little bit of poor matchmaking when it comes to Bellator, if I'm not mistaken. I think they gave her a rough fight. Hannah Guy's been killing it since she since she defeated Valerie Loretta there. And I got to say, like, Valerie, she's got something. Again, she's dedicated. She's a lifelong martial artist. She's under a good gym. She's obviously making changes because she cares about her career. And again, I'm sure she wants to win the title, but she also said it when I interviewed her. You know, I didn't say I was going to be undefeated when I asked her about the loss. I said I was going to entertain and become like a very good fighter, and I'm still on that track. And I very much think that she is. Obviously, she's got a tough task. Somebody that has more wins than her, more experience. And if you look at the face-off, somebody that's significantly bigger and longer.
Yes.
That's when I'm like, oh, I don't know. I remember when I was watching the PFL fight between Abigail Montes and Clarissa Shields. Abigail trains at Lowe Gym with, you know, Alexa Grasso, Irene Aldana, Alejandra Lara. And I know her coach, and I knew who Abigail was. And I'm like, I don't know if PFL did their homework. And I tweeted that, and turns out that fight. So sometimes people think that, you know, this is going to be a wash, right? They wouldn't match her up against someone tough. But look, everyone makes mistakes. Again, I'm not saying this is one of them, but I'm just saying, like, in regards to Valerie Loretta's last loss, I do think people are giving her too much of a hard time. Again, I think people gave Pico more slack. And again, at one point he was 4-3 compared to Valerie's 3-1 record. So again, I'm not saying she's going to be the next champion, but I do think she's going to get better. I do think she's going to become a competent fighter, a well-rounded fighter. But again, you just got to give her time. The problem is, again, she's under a big light. And we expect people that are under big lights to already have the answers to everything. But really, she if she were in the regional circuit, you'd probably be like, you'd watch her and you'd be like, hey, this girl's pretty good.
Yeah, no, you know, I love the fact that you bring up Aaron Pico, because it's funny, like, how can you simultaneously be like, what was Pico thinking fighting these tough guys, and then like, why is she only fighting cans? Like, right, you can't simultaneously have it both ways.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I really do think fans are giving her too much of a tough time. I don't know why, but again, and look, if you look at her last loss, like, she lost because she didn't have technical aspects, you know, the jiu-jitsu, the ground game. But that you can learn. But she showed tons of heart, man. She fought to the final bell. Yep. And heart is something you cannot teach. So if anything, I would rather much see that she lacks technical deficiencies than heart, than will. She's definitely a fighter. I mean, in her last fight, she got mounted. She got ground and pounded. She got put in positions where a lot of fighters, you know, and you've seen it, John, they would roll over and let that rear naked choke sink in. They would dive their head into somebody's arms and let them snatch a guillotine. That girl was losing, and she still saw the final bell, and she still fought to the final bell and didn't let her opponent finish her. So I'd rather see that than, you know, than technical than lack of heart and will. So again, technical deficiencies, you can all fix. The heart is there. So
well said.
We'll see what happens with Valerie, but definitely interested in that fight, as you can tell.
That's awesome, man. Well said. All right, last thing I'll ask you, Danny. I know you did have a chance to speak with Scott Coker. Scott, a master of speaking around things and saying a lot and not saying much, but did he give you any nuggets? I'll tell people, go to the MMA Junkie page, go to MMA Junkie YouTube as well. They can watch the whole thing there. But was there anything that really stood out to you, one little nugget that you were like, oh, that's interesting?
Yeah, so I asked him about AJ McKee. Again, this is what he says. It doesn't necessarily have to be the truth, right? But I asked him about AJ McKee, and I'm like, hey, so he does reportedly have one fight left on his contract. What's the deal with that? Have you guys been able to re-sign him, and when can we expect him back? And he said, no, AJ's got multiple fights with us, and yes, he's going to be in South Florida at the event. We're going to talk to him. So I'm like, okay, interesting. I don't know what's going on there, but definitely something to keep an eye on. Also, Kayla Harrison supposed to be in attendance at Bellator 271 this Friday with Dan Lambert. You know, Scott did say he was going to say hello. And he says he would like to have bigger conversations with Kayla, meaning, you know, at least some sort of smaller conversation had to take place, right? Right. Again, he didn't give me too much detail on it, but, you know, Kayla's making an appearance. So that is something. What else? You know, Fedor is expected probably to fight next summer, sometime in June, and in Moscow. He's going to have his final fight in Moscow. It's not going to be stateside. I asked him if a title shot was probably it, and he didn't really want to answer. But yeah, that was basically it. There was other nuggets. He talked about Dylan Danis as well. Talked about Patricky's title win at 155, and obviously previewed the main event, the whole Bellator 271 card. So
I like it. Talk about Dylan Danis. Are they going to try to offer Ali Abdelaziz a fight contract? Get this thing in the Bellator cage?
I didn't say that, but I should have. Yeah, definitely. People would definitely watch that one. And look, people don't know, but Ali used to fight, and I believe he's a judo black belt. Like, Ali can scrap. He's a manager. He wears a suit, but he has an extensive martial arts background. So so don't rule him out of a fight, man. That guy, I mean, if it comes down to it, Ali will definitely, you know, stand his ground. But, you know, basically on Dylan Danis, they've been not bugging him, but they've been checking into him, and Dylan hasn't really reached out for a fight. So I asked him, hey, so what, you know, what the hell's going on? Are we going to see this guy? And he's like, hey, basically that's up to Dylan. We have our phone lines open. So whenever he wants to call in for a fight, you know, we're here.
Interesting, interesting. All right, man. Well, listen, I know it's been a long day for you, so I won't keep you any longer. I'll let you get back to it. Obviously, at Danny Segura TV on Twitter, make sure you're following him. You're going to have coverage of Bellator 271. You've had it all week. You'll have more this weekend. And, man, pretty much any show that's in Florida now, you can expect Danny to be there, right? It's that's your territory now.
Yeah, this is Danny Segura land over here now. You know, BKFC, boxing, MMA. You know, we got your cover down here in South Florida. Yeah, so yeah, it's definitely been some interesting few months.
All right, shout out to Danny Segura for the assistance there. Thank you very much, sir. And check out his coverage all week long. It's all the stuff that's been there and all the stuff that will continue to be there through Fight Night. We'll have full coverage at MMA Junkie. Now, we get to our favorite section of the show that has no sections. The segment of the show that's developing a segment, maybe, or trying. I mean, we're just kind of freewheeling this thing. You know, I was hanging out with my man Cody Merrow in New York. I mean, he's polished. Like, he brings in segments. He's a producer, man. He's got. We don't do that. That's not really our style. You know what I mean? But we have gotten this one, and luckily, I know Cold Coffee. While you've been busy looking for a place, I know you've still been kind of fine tuning the music to get it all set up.
Yeah.
And I think there's some. I think you said you had some nice edits to it. So let's go ahead and tee up the theme song.
Oh yeah. Roadmap. Yeah.
That's not very polished at all. All right,
not
listen.
Not polished at all, David. I polished a couple beers off.
The roadmap.
Yeah.
The roadmap is when we turn it over to our fine supporters over at patreon.com/MMAroadshow for as little as $3 a month. Of course, you can help support the show, and of course, you get exclusive access to the and a half episodes as well. And for some of those higher tiers that are even willing to take their love for us to another level, they get to help call the shots and direct the show. And so let's get to those questions this week, Cold Coffee. Lay them out there for us.
All right, first, even though this is one of the more recent ones that came in, but I feel like this has been discussed a bunch of times and even on some of the latest show and everything on the spinning back click. But Muna says, hey, guys, this is a question about Thug Rose's next opponent. It has to be Carla. Rankings-wise, it makes sense. Carla beat Rose to be the first champ, and there is no one else. Is it the UFC playing hardball because they share the same manager and Butler, or did Carla really hurt Dana's feelings and were not aware?
Yeah, listen, Muna, man, I'm with you 100%. To me, I think it's got to be Carla Esparza. I actually went on a SiriusXM show earlier this week and was talking about the same thing. And Jimmy Smith was the host, and he was kind of saying, hey, do you think the fact that maybe she's not the most marketable and Carla, you know, is maybe the least appealing matchup to the fans? And, you know, because it's twofold, right? Number one, she's quiet. She's never going to talk trash. That's just not what she does. And – you know, her style is wrestling based, right? And while, you know, those of us kind of grappling nerds may really appreciate that, you know, to the casual fan, it's you know, Justin Gaethje and Michael Chandler, they want every fight to look like that, where it's just stand and bang. And Carla Esparza is not going to give you that. So, you know, I understand. And listen, I think it's clear at this point that the UFC is at least pursuing other options, right? You remember a few weeks back at the Contender Series, I was like, hey, what do you think about Carla Esparza? She says she'll wait, and Dana's like, I wouldn't wait. I'd stay busy. And then the night of UFC 268, you know, I say, well, okay, you know, Rose won. Now is Carla the right next fight? And he's like, well, that's an option. You know what I mean? So it's clear reading between the lines or looking in another direction, but it's got to be the next fight. I just don't think you can justify anything else. And what I would say is that, you know, maybe the UFC doesn't see this as the most appealing matchup, but to me, the story is there. They have a fight before. You know, they have a fight that Carla won. Doesn't Rose want to get revenge for that? And hell, you got Rose even saying it's the next logical fight. So I understand that it may not seem like the most appealing matchup for the casual fan, but if they get in there and they put their promotional muscle behind it and they sell it and they really do what the UFC is so good at doing, they'll make it the fight that people want to see. You know, you sell the history between them, and you say that Rose is now kind of, you know, righting these wrongs, and, you know, look at how well Rose performs in rematches, blah, 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 blah. So, yeah, I think it's the fight to make. I think I understand the UFC's hesitancy, and this is without me talking in the behind the scenes, but I think I understand what their hesitancy is. But I think that ultimately they're going to have to come to their senses, and that's the fight to make.
It should be. It should be. And I think a lot of people speculate that maybe something happened behind the scenes. You know, maybe Carla turned something down and they're upset about it. I mean, she's on 5-fight win streak. You know, Rose is like on a 3-fight win streak right now. You know, Carla deserves the shot. So, you know, I hope it's not just a case of, you know, holding a grudge, you know, for something. If that is the case, you know, it sucks that if that is the thing, if it's a markability, I get it. But you at some point, it just feels sort of just shameful and sort of hurtful that you're not giving your next ranked person the shot after doing everything she's done and waiting for so long. So hopefully it's not something as childish as just holding a grudge because they turned down a fight, which a lot of people seem to speculate that that's one of the reasons.
Oh, the UFC would never do that,
never
would
do
they?
That. Never.
Never.
Never. This one, I'm not sure if you'll know, but we'll go to, you mentioned Scott earlier, but we'll go back to one of Scott's questions. And I haven't heard or really looked into this, but he said your best guess on number of pay-per-view buys for UFC 268 in the States and globally. And why do you think ESPN does not put that information out for public consumption?
That's an interesting question. I'll be upfront and say I don't know. I don't consider myself to be an expert in gauging pay-per-view buys. It's not something I research a whole lot of because, I'll be honest with you, it doesn't really impact me. I know it impacts the UFC's business, and it impacts maybe how they view certain fighters. And so maybe from that perspective, it would be good to know because you'd realize like who were the true needle movers that the UFC might want to push forward through the rankings a little bit. I don't know. If you watch the post-fight press conference, you can see Dana White was awfully happy about how things were trending, and he even turned over to Hunter and was like, hey, should I tell him? And Hunter was like, absolutely not. You know, do not piss off Mickey Mouse. You know, that's their business over there, yeah. our bosses. That's their pay-per-view numbers, and they don't really want to put it out. And you know, I don't know why they don't really want to put it out for public. I just don't think they really care to share their finances, their successes. I mean, that's what companies do, right? They don't necessarily need to share everything that's out there for them. So, yeah, I apologize. I'll be the first to admit, man, I'm not super well versed in, you know, kind of predicting pay-per-view buys or even getting that information. But it's a lot tougher to get nowadays, that's for sure. ESPN keeps it a lot closer to the vest than it used to be when it was just a UFC figure.
Yeah, and my only guess on that, I won't speculate on the numbers because I'm even more clueless than what you would be. I would only think too, with the ESPN having a parent company, if it's like other organizations, even with like when UFC's under Endeavor, I'm sure Endeavor, you know, doesn't like to tell the other areas how much money one particular group is making when others are struggling. You know, Disney owns a lot of things, and ESPN is a big, big expenditure, and it brings in a lot of money as well. But it's got to be one of the biggest expenditures that they have as well. So I think if people figured out the sort of money that ESPN can bring in on things, as well as how much ESPN pays out for things, other organizations or other groups would look or want to dive deeper into the money that Disney has. So it's probably a directive coming down from Disney that they don't want the, you know, sort of things underneath to give too much away of the money that's being brought in. I imagine they'd want to keep certain financial things close at hand, because that all equates down to when they go and try to get broadcast deals and other sort of things. They want to have that sort of some of those numbers so that when they try to bargain and pick and choose and make deals happen and other things, they want to, you know how much that they can sway in any particular direction without it being too public knowledge, because then it's hard to ask for the numbers that they want, you know, per se. So that's my only guess as for why ESPN would kind of keep that.
I agree. I just don't think they want to, you know, give all their financial information out there. I did want to say, though, you know, you talk about them owning a lot of things. Did you see, I saw some numbers recently that Disney Plus has 118 million subscribers.
It's jumped up quite a bit.
That is insane. Yeah.
Well, I mean, they're shit. When it started, the catalog that you had access, and I got on it pretty early, and I think you got on it really early too. Like, when you look at it now, it's very different than when it first started. Like, the catalog was very, very slim. It was like The Mandalorian and like the Star Wars stuff, and then just a little bit of extra stuff. Now it's constantly growing. They're investing more and more into the library that people have access to. So it's much more worthwhile. So I see them tout the numbers over and over. I watch some of these stock shows, and they talk about the subscriber counts going up. And good for them.
That's like $800 million a month in revenue off of just their subscribers. That's insane.
But when you think about the stuff that's on there, the stuff that they paid for, the libraries that they bought, oh my Lord. Crazy. Yeah. Crazy, crazy.
Yeah, because Star Wars was like $4 billion or something, right?
Yes, yeah, so I would imagine it's in my heart. It's worth at least $60 billion or more because it's amazing. It's fantastic. I mean, yeah, but these guys. So when you see numbers like that, it's so crazy, because we see those numbers and we think how astronomical and how large they are. But when you think about what these guys spend out on things, it's just crazy. It's otherworldly. But yeah, it's funny. I saw somebody that was just posting. Oh, it was Maddie from our staff that went to Disney. He had to do a guy on our staff, Matt Erickson, does these status flights on Southwest so he can keep his status.
Right.
I thought this was kind of romantic. I was like, good for him. He had to do a status flight. So him and his wife decided to go catch dinner down at their favorite restaurant at Disney or something. I was like, dude, that's baller. I was like, man, look at this little romantic. He's like, you know, babe, we got to do a flight. We could just go, you know, to the next state over. Or how about we go to Disney and catch dinner. And but even their parks are getting more people going there. People are starting to open up. So Disney's doing they're in a really, really good spot, you know, to do some stuff. But the streaming service has improved quite a bit. When it first started, I was like, dude, I don't even know if I'm going to keep this thing. But now it's solid. It's definitely gotten a lot better. But yeah, I'm waiting for that Mandalorian to come back around, man. Let's do this.
That was fun.
Let's do this.
That was fun.
All right, let's jump up and we'll go to the top of the submission. Go to Josh Hernandez. And he said, do you think there is any shenanigans with Masvidal pulling out of the fight? Maybe an easy way to break up that fight to make other fights happen? Just conspiracy theory thinking.
Hey, Josh, I'm not going to lie to you, man. I like where your head's at with that one. I don't think there is, but it's kind of hard not to feel that way, right? I mean, listen, you had Colby Covington immediately turning his attention to Jorge Masvidal after the fight, you know. And it was funny when it was announced the other day that Jorge was out. The first thing that came to my head was that old meme of Dana White from Tough where he's like holding the big stack of cash, you know, and you just say like, yo, Jorge, you got injured. You know what I mean? Like, here's some money. Step aside. We're going to make some bigger fights. But no, I don't think that's the case. It does sound like it's legit. I think from what I'm hearing, it sounds like the play right now is to try to put Colby and Jorge together, which makes all the sense in the world. And I think Leon Edwards is going to try to just wait for Kamaru Usman and get the title fight. And to be honest with you, man, I think he has every right to do that. You know what I mean? Edwards, I know, may not be everybody's cup of tea, might not be everybody's favorite fighter, but he's been snake bit in a lot of situations. Yeah. And here's one more, right, where he was ready to fight. You know, he was ready to face the guy that was supposedly going to get him there, and then the guy didn't show up. So, and Usman has mentioned Edwards' name in the past as somebody that he thinks is deserving of an opportunity. They have history together. It's a long time ago. Usman won the first fight. So I think that's the way, as I understand. I know there's been a lot of talk about Khamzat, kind of stepping up. I don't think that's where it's going to be yet. I think my understanding is that's kind of the play right now is Masvidal Covington. I have heard some people say, what about as tough coaches? I'm not sure when the Ultimate Fighter is ready to film again. But if they can make that work, I'm down for that, man. I've been saying that from the beginning. I think they would be must-see TV, man.
I didn't tune in last season, but if those were the coaches, I would watch. Hands down.
Absolutely.
Hands down, I would watch.
So, Josh Hernandez, I don't blame you for having the conspiracy theory thinking there, man, but it's okay. Take the tinfoil hat off. I don't think it's there, but, I certainly see why the writing on the wall looks that way.
This one from Daniel. The first one is a comment. He congratulates me on the new palatial grounds. Thank you very much, Daniel. Mm-hmm. The second part is, can you give us an update about the MMAJA, that is the Mixed Martial Arts Journalist Association? Are you an active member, and what are your thoughts about it now?
Interesting. So I will say off the top, I am not an active member of the Mixed Martial Arts Journalists Association, and I never have been. I did go to their initial meeting where they kind of rolled everything out to us and pitched what they wanted to do and how they did. And I kind of actually helped them early on with some of their other iterations of kind of drafting guidelines and recommendations and that sort of thing. But ultimately, I never pulled the trigger on joining the MMAJA because I wanted to see them in action first. I didn't have, unfortunately, at the time they were being formed, it was after my son was born, and my life was kind of changing in terms of free time and how things work. The UFC schedule was ramping up, my kid was getting older, and so it was difficult for me to have just spare time that I could dedicate to it. So I knew that I didn't have enough available time to be like a leader of the Mixed Martial Arts Journalists Association. That's, of course, if they would even have me, take a leadership position. But, I knew that I wasn't going to be able to volunteer myself for a role like that. So I said, you know what, since I know I won't be able to volunteer my time to be a leader in the organization, let me see what the organization does. Let me see what steps they take, what their first couple of directives are, what kind of things they do, and see what, how they handle things. And if so, then I'll join in. And unfortunately, it just kind of stagnated. It never really did much, to be honest with you. I think, and again, since I wasn't a part of it, I can't really speak necessarily to what was going on behind the scenes. But the truth is, they just never really took any action steps. And because of that, I thought, I wanted to stand back and wait to see what happened. And unfortunately, nothing really happened. So I never pulled the trigger on becoming a member of the Mixed Martial Arts Journalists Association.
Just imagine if the guy that always got the first question was a part of the organization, maybe they would have did something. You need to have first question
so
guy.
My fault?
You need to have first question guy on board to make
wait,
something
it's
happen.
My fault? Oh, God.
Just kidding. I was a member at first. I remember paid the dues for the first thing, but I remember nothing really came from it. I remember nothing really happened. There was one time where an event or something happened where nobody was able to be present. And I think we had a member go be the pool member to go ask questions. And I remember that for some reason that flopped dreadfully for some reason.
Sean Al-Shadi was the pool member. I can't remember exactly what, but it didn't go good. I know he wasn't exactly thrilled.
Yeah, he had to go ask questions about something that somebody was like, oh, go ask this. And he's like, I don't think he was comfortable or didn't really want to have to be in that role. And I think Dana or somebody was just like, what? It was like, this is stupid, blah, 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 blah. And then it just never really happened again after that. They reached out to me not too long ago and said, hey, do you want to, redo your fee again and join up again? And I just kind of let it drop because, again, just like before, was a member, but nothing happened for years. So I just kind of is sort of ignored the request. But yeah, it'd be interesting to see if it keeps moving forward and it does do something and it's a viable thing that needs to have members. I'd get behind it again. I had no problem with it. I know one of the stipulations about it was before, but even now you can't really do it. It was like you can't pick up any side work for an organization that is covered by like the MMAJA. So say if I wanted to get side work with Bellator or side work with, you know, the UFC or whatever, that wouldn't be possible as a member. Granted, now as a USA Today media member, I'm not supposed to pick any of that up either.
Right.
But that being said, it was kind of interesting just already sort of saying, okay, I have to agree to not take more work if I'm part of this. And that was kind of like, maybe I should have thought about that before I joined up. I mean, I honored it while I was a member, but it definitely broached my head as well. I was like, wow, I'm limiting my income possibilities because I'm part of an organization that covers some of these entities I might work with. So that was another way I was sort of hesitant going back into it. But good question. Yeah, I mean, it's good. It's still around, and hopefully it'll keep, you know, surviving and start thriving. And hopefully we'll see the member count go forward, and hopefully it can do some great things. I didn't look up this individual that Daniel had a second part of his question. He in fact said, shit, I got a second one. What the fuck? Or I'm sorry, WTF. I just expanded it. I don't know.
Wow.
What the frick happened to Aaron True, the guy that had a gimmick before Schmo came up with his? I'm going to have to look that person up. I don't know who Aaron True is.
Aaron True was around for a while. He was a guy that was in Las Vegas. He was doing well in the scene as kind of a I think like an individual, I would say. I don't think he ever worked for a major outlet, if I recall. I may be wrong with that, and if I am, I'm sorry. I don't think he ever worked for one of the big organizations, but he just kind of had his own channel. And would go get interviews, and I think he kind of bounced back and forth between SoCal and Las Vegas. And he actually fought once in Tough Enough and had a victory, and I remember that was a big night for him. But I don't know what's happened. I haven't seen him in a long time. I think he's still kind of around, but maybe behind the scenes and doing some video production, outside of the sport of MMA. But that's actually a good question. I'll try to see if I can find it. If anybody else knows, feel free to hit me up. Like I said, he was kind of embedded here in the Vegas and SoCal scene for quite a while. I was getting kind of big interviews and doing some numbers, I think, on like YouTube and that sort of thing. And then he just kind of went away. It's tough, man. I mean, I've always said, like, we're very fortunate to have an organization behind us, man. It is tough to be on that grind by yourself. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, as an independent, man. Ooh, kudos, man, to anybody that can make that work. It's tough.
It's so hard to do that. And so to do it for an extended period of time, man, not a simple thing to do. So shout out to everybody that's ever tried doing it. Shout out to anybody that's still doing it. Because, yeah, it's a little more difficult when you got to generate all your revenue and all that good stuff on your own.
All right, and the last question, and funny enough, we kind of already sort of talked about it, but we'll talk about it again. Enrique Ortiz says, hey, guys, with Khamzat getting so much hype for a title fight, I was curious on your stance on it. Most MMA podcasters always urge fighters on their first UFC contract to fight it out with less than known fighters, unranked fighters, until they get a pay increase in the next contract. As his manager, what would you do?
Well, that's a good question, and that's a good way to look at it. You're right. If they're trying to pay you the same money, I know it's not popular, and I really don't recommend people talking about it in public. But when guys like Sean O'Malley say, "I'm not getting paid anymore to fight this guy," so why would I fight number 2 in the world when I can fight number 50 in the world and get paid the same? It's not a popular thing to put in public, but he's 100% right. Yep. You know what I mean? Like, yep, you're not. So, but I think it's clear that Khamzat probably has a little bit of Dana White privilege. You know what I mean? Yep. I think he could go in there and get it. So you're absolutely right. You know, if they were going to come, and it's kind of funny, we were talking about it, I don't think they're going to do like Khamzat, Leon Edwards, but even like Leon Edwards, if they'd have come to Leon and said, hey, Leon, look, man, sorry you lost Jorge Masvidal, but we want you to fight Khamzat Chimaev. At that point, I mean, you just got to negotiate. Like, everything's on the table. You just got to ask for it. And if that had been the situation, if I'm Leon, I say, okay, listen, I see what you're trying to do here. This is the hot guy that nobody wants to fight. You know, you're letting him jump way up the line. He hasn't done all the things that I've done to get here, and I'll take it, but you need to give me a new contract, or you need to pay me more for this fight. You can ask for those things. So your manager has to go in there and negotiate on your behalf. So it's not like, you know, these contracts are not set in stone in the same way that, you know, you can go, you know, they can terminate you. You can also go negotiate. Now, I do always think it looks bad when you're like, you sign a new deal, and then your next fight, you're like, ah, I'm holding out. I need to sign a new deal. Like, wait a minute, you just signed a new deal. But when there's special circumstances like this, right? Like if Hamzat's ranked, I mean, I don't even think he's ranked right now, right? And so he's fighting these for this side. If they're like, hey, we want you to go. Now, if it's a title fight, they're going to give you a new contract anyway. They're going to give you a different contract. But if they're asking you to do something that's special, that's different, you know, that's a huge step up like that, then you absolutely go ask for more money. But if they're not going to give you more money, then honestly, it's like I said, it's not popular, but yeah. Face the lower ranked guys and make your way up. So, but I think if Hamzat were to get a big opportunity, I don't think he'd have any problem being like, you know, hey, you got to pay me a little bit more because this isn't what my contract is for right now. So, we'll see. I'm anxious to see what the next move is for him. Man, I'm not gonna say I don't want Leon to fight him, but man, I would just feel bad for him. Feel bad for Leon.
Be a tough break because that would be a hella crazy hard fight for him. For mm-hmm. anybody, just styles wise. I mean, his just brutal. Now, is he not ranked in our UFC rank in the MMA Junkie rankings? Hamzat?
I don't think so.
I'm looking at the UFC rankings. He is ranked. Guess where they have him? Number 10. Can you believe that? I'm a little shocked that he's that high up. He's up there. I can't believe they have him at number 10. And like we said before, I guarantee he is not on his initial contract. Like you said, if they want to make, if you working things out for them and you're taking fights and you're doing, and you're stepping up, if they just need somebody to fill a gap and, you know, be on the prelims, I guarantee that person's probably not being able to renegotiate a contract. If you're stepping up short notice and you're hopping onto a main card, like he's been able to do, I guarantee if he wanted to try to work something out contract wise or get some sort of payoff to the side, it's been honored. It's been done.
Yep.
I don't think he by any means is making probably even close to what he was making when he first was signed. This guy is like the hottest prospect, the hottest call out outside of Islam Makhachev and the heat that he's bringing and the way that people are talking about him. This is the number two guy. I mean, he's everybody's talking about this cat. So I guarantee his manager's been in there because he's been getting phone calls, and I guarantee the UFC has been more than happy to give this kid something. But at that point, he's going to have to start really facing the guys. And what the crazy thing about it is that he wants them all. He wants everybody. He's not shying away from anything, you know. So even if the UFC is paying him more and they're like, well, that means we're going to give you tougher guys, he's just like, I'll smash them, you know. Like, it's awesome. I love his energy. I love his personality when he goes in there. He's speaking more and more English. I love what he's going in there. He's bringing the swagger. But what he brings the most is he brings the fight, man. He is so dominant. He is so impressive to watch. I feel bad for anybody in there right now. I think Leon is an absolutely fantastic fighter. He's a great striker. He has great movement, but he's going to be in trouble if he gets in with his kid.
I'd pick Hamzat.
I would too. Without even feeling bad, just for the fact, and one, his size. Oh my God, this kid is big, man. He gets bigger and bigger every time we see him. Mm-hmm. He's filling out. He's fantastic, man. He's a future champ. Just like we can say that about Makhachev. Makhachev is going to be a future champ. Kamzat's going to be a future champ. It's just a matter of time before it happens. I don't think that's us jumping on the hype train. I think this kid's gone in there and showed it to top-notch guys. I mean, every guy that's like, oh, this kid hasn't seen anybody like me, he's coming in here. Mershart thought that, oh, you know, I'm going to smash this kid. How quick was that over? I mean,
yeah.
It's just crazy, man. This kid is something, man. And I don't envy anybody that's trying to step up into it. If I was Leon, I would be trying to hold out for something bigger, knowing that if I take this fight, I'm probably going to lose. So, and that's no, that's just it. It's just the styles. This kid is so good. His, once he gets his arms wrapped around you, you're in trouble. But the crazy thing is, I mean, he's violent with his hands, man. He's got a lot of power, a lot of strength. And I hate to be like the guy that's just feels like jumping on a bandwagon, because I feel like I'm jumping on the bandwagon with this kid. But he's done everything to prove that he deserves every bit of hype that's being hyped around him and thrown his way. And it's been a while, you know, the UFC, they're not being shy about it either. It's not like they're like, well, you know, this kid is not, they're like, wow, this kid's one of the greatest things we've seen, you know. And I don't know. I mean, what he was able to do to Leech, man. Jesus. Leech is super tough. And he just made super short work of him. And I was like, wow. If you weren't convinced before that fight and you thought there was a possibility that it was all hype, that fight would have answered that question. And
should have.
And it just went completely to prove that this kid is everything that that they're saying and everything about him, man.
Yep. It's a bandwagon you shouldn't mind jumping on. And let me be factually correct. I apologize. We do, after the last win, we did bring Khamzat in at number 15 in our rankings. And I'll say this. Our rankings include Bellator as well. We have three Bellator fighters in our top 15. So if you pull them out,
he would be
if you pulled them out, he'd be number 12. Yeah, he'd be number 12. So I guess, you know, it's not that far off from 10, but he's got some big fights. So looking forward to it. All right, well, listen, we've rambled on long enough, of course, and we do have an early morning with the weigh-ins tomorrow morning. So stick with us for Bellator coverage from Danny Segura out there in Florida, myself and Cole Coffey. We'll have UFC coverage from right here in Las Vegas. Again, as I always say, if you like what you listen to, do us a favor. Log in, rate us, review us. That helps us a lot. Or go support us at patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow. That helps us even more. And
it pays for that production value when you hear that roadmap intro.
You don't think that stuff comes free, do you? That stuff costs money. We need more of that so we can continue that high-level production. But whether you support us or not, let me just say, thanks for listening.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.